5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning with WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. It's funny, I've spent my entire career creating sports content. When you create, someone else is always the focus. The athlete, the interview subject, the school, the team, your focus is away from you. That's the way it's supposed to be, and that is the way I was taught. Coming up at CNN, all of our reporters and anchors were true journalists who knew the story was never about them. It was always about their subject. You'll see this difference sometimes when you watch your local network sports. They so often inject themselves into the stories. You know, watch me play a game of horse with Chris Paul coming up at 11. Check me out trying to throw a discus with gold medal winner Christoph Harding coming up at 6. This always drove me nuts. The story is never supposed to be about you. That's my personal belief and the one that I have held near and dear as I was the news director at Fox Sports Northwest. When my anchor asked one night, can we do a live poll on tonight's show asking what the fans think of my new haircut? And yes, this did actually happen. I had to initiate emergency deep breathing techniques before calmly saying, I don't think that's in the best interest of the audience. The reason I bring this up is because I ask so many of my guests to step out of their comfort zone and become the focus when they are so often trained to think otherwise. You know, when I speak to somebody like a NFL super agent Lee Steinberg, well, he's polished. He's used to being in front of the microphone and talking about himself. But when I grab Celia Busa from ESPN or Brian Killingsworth, CMO of the Vegas Golden Knights, or Tiara Brown, manager of social responsibility for the Charlotte Hornets, they aren't used to this questioning and this focus, which is why I really appreciate their honesty and insight so much. Today's guest is a lot like me. Stacey Kelleher is the director of production for the Philadelphia Eagles. She's paid to create, analyze, and critique content. It is literally her job to think, nope, not good enough, not up to our standards, we need to do better. So when the spotlight is on her, it's a little different. But Stacey's a pro's pro. She nailed it, despite telling me often how uncomfortable she was. Prior to coming to the Eagles, she spent 6 years with Ohio State Athletics as a Big Ten production manager, meaning she hired a ton of student interns and volunteers to help run their event production. She knows a lot about resumes, cover letters, interviewing, and the incredible life of working in sports television production. She nailed it. Let's get into it. I want you to hear all this great insight and information. Here she is, Philadelphia Eagles Director of Production, Stacey Kelleher. Hi, Stacey. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you. So thank you for coming on the show. It's a cool world of the sports industry that you're a part of, especially with your background at Ohio State and now with the Philadelphia Eagles. So I've stumbled upon, before we get into all that, before we get into your career and some of the things you've done, I stumbled upon an article you wrote a couple years ago on cover letters. And I found myself agreeing with everything you were saying. I was like, oh, yes, totally. I'm with you. Yes, it's awesome. So let's start with that. You've reviewed a lot of resumes over your career. Why do you think the cover letter is so important? And why do so many young, inexperienced people kind of mess up this process?
Yeah, so I wrote that during a time of frustration while I was at Ohio State working in the athletic department. I was managing the Big Ten Network Student U program. So, you know, I was hiring 4 or 5 students at a time, like 3 times a year, even more than that sometimes, because there's so much turnover with students graduating. So we really worked hard to get, we wanted to get the best talent, new talent in there. And I was frustrated because I didn't care about their resumes at that point because they didn't have any experience. So right. I was looking for a cover letter to kind of show me their potential, not necessarily what they've already done. And some people wouldn't have one, or some people would just, you know, mail it in and send me like this outline. So I thought it was like the most important thing for them to do, and they weren't doing it. I wanted to give people a chance, and if they didn't take the time to apply to the job and put time into a cover letter, it was hard for me to see their potential.
Yeah, totally. So what were some of those cover letters that you did see that like they helped, they stood out to you? Like what made you read one and go, okay, this person, they've got it right. And I'm noticing them and I'm feeling their vibe. What could somebody take away from that? What did you pick up?
I think it's a lot of like telling me why they want the job without explicitly saying it, you know, seeing that they're a good writer, because everything in sports, basically, you have to be a good writer. Just being able to articulate to me why they wanted the job. And even there were a lot of students we hired that didn't even want to go into sports as a career. They just wanted this job in college. And they did a good job of telling me why. Like maybe there was nothing on their resume that led them down this, you know, path of sports journalism or anything like that. But they told me, like, I was part of a team in high school and I really want to feel that, you know, adrenaline rush again of live sports production. So just that like little touch of bragging about their themselves and what they can do for our team.
I loved one line you had in the article about hiring. It's being exciting, but also grueling. I think that's a really important thing for people to realize, is that I know when I was a news director at Fox Sports Northwest, I had the very same experience. You'd start out like all pumped up. I'm going to get a new person in here. They're going to change our culture. They're going to bring in this skill set. It's going to be awesome. And then by like the 25th resume or phone call, you're like, oh my gosh, everybody sounds exactly the same. And I've always kind of felt like people in their cover letter, that was the really opportunity to tell me a story, to sell me something about them outside of their resume, you know, a time they overcame an issue or handled an objection. Do you agree? Are those the kind of things that kind of stand out to you? Or do you like it to be a little bit more buttoned up and professional?
No, I agree. I definitely think showing a little bit of personality is important. I think if you just keep in mind what a cover letter is supposed to do and what it is as a tool, then you get a good cover letter. I definitely don't like a template, buttoned up professionalism. But also if you go a little bit too far the other way, it kind of becomes something that I don't need. But if you keep in mind what it's for, then you kind of end up with a really good, you know, picture into who you could be as a team member for them. I think like I'm thinking about one time I wrote a cover letter and it just felt really good after I wrote it and I read it back and like, it's because I'm talking about why I want to work in sports, not necessarily, you know, just trying to be creative for the sake of being creative. That being said, I do think it's very important to keep it business letter style and, you know, give me all the information I need in there as well.
For sure. It's awesome. It's great advice. And I know I love to have actionable advice that comes out of this. And I know we're off to a good start because that's going to be the kind of thing that everybody can listen to and put to work, you know, like I changed their cover letter technique a little bit. So thank you. I'm sure we'll get into that subject again. We'll get into that with some depth, but let's get into you a little bit. You went to a really small school, Wheeling Jesuit University, but you've also worked at a really large school in Ohio State. Mm-hmm. What do you kind of see as the pluses and minuses of each experience? And if you kind of had to go back again, would you stay small or do you like that that bigger size for your education?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've worked at a lot of small schools. my husband is actually a college football coach at Division II schools and been involved with those. And then, like you said, being at Ohio State. So I think I've seen like the best of both worlds. And for me, coming out of a very, very, very small high school, I didn't think I could handle the overwhelming nature of a big school. That being said, a lot of people from my class did go on to big schools. At Wheeling Jesuit, I was able to have very small class sizes and feel that kind of family environment you get from the small school, good, bad, or indifferent. It is what it is. They're your family. At Ohio State, it was big and overwhelming, but I think they're kind of more the same than they are different in that when I was at Wheeling Jesuit, I had friends from many different majors and backgrounds because, you know, you really don't have a choice. There's a limited amount of people around you.
Right.
And it took me a little bit of time to find, you know, where I belonged on campus and where I belonged. I found that place in the athletic department and I met a couple other people who, you know, were just like me, in that aspect. And I see that at Ohio State when I would hire students in who had their group. Maybe it was people they met freshman year and their sorority or fraternity. But when they came into our group and started working with us, they felt at home and they found their small pod, if you will, you know? So it's definitely different. The obvious part of, you know, being in a big school and a small school, but I think they're more alike. And I think that it's the people at Ohio State that make it feel small. So the cons to a small school is you might not have the benefits of selecting a diverse amount of classes in your major because there's just not that many offerings. At Ohio State, maybe your classes are too big, but at Ohio State, they have those really awesome professors and people in the athletic department that can kind of bring in small groups of people together and make you feel like you kind of found your place in life, you know?
Oh, it's so true. And I think it's a good message for everybody to remember is that it always comes down to you as a person. Like, it's not about the school, big, small, opportunity, no opportunities. It's about you. It's about the drive that you put into it. You're going to get a great internship and experience whether you go to a small school or a big school if you put in the effort. Yeah. And that's the thing to remember.
And that's
right?
What it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Internships are super important, as I'm sure you guys talk about all the time on this podcast. But also, I think to the point of your last question, would I do it differently? Being at Wheeling Jesuit has made me a unique candidate for jobs. Their philosophy of education, the Jesuits, has always been a well-rounded individual. So, you know, I took a lot of different classes outside of my major, and our education philosophy was always to serve others. So I have kind of based my leadership philosophy on serving others, which makes me different, I think, than another candidate, which may be a better fit. You know, somebody who went to a giant school and had a ton of different opportunities, you know, they may fit better in a different role that I wouldn't fit in. So it's just, like you said before, making yourself stand out in a different way.
I love this. Okay, let's lean into this a little bit more. One of the things I hear all the time when I talk to people on this podcast, people that are in charge of hiring, people that are at the C-level, people that are mid-managers, whatever it is, you ask them the question and say, so what do you look for? If you have 300 people applying for a job, how do you find the right people? And they'll always list off these soft skills, work ethic, passion, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always like, well, how do you find that in a resume and cover letter? And we keep going round and round in certain ways. But you hit on a key word there, talking about leadership and what you were able to learn at Wheeling Jesuit. How has that kind of transcribed itself into your career, that ability to feel like you're a leader? And how have you been able to sell yourself in that way?
So I think it took me a very long time to find my leadership philosophy, if you will. Maybe I always kind of knew it. It just was hard to formalize it. And that really came, I actually got my master's from Gonzaga, a different Jesuit school. I took a class on servant leadership, and that kind of clicked for me. And then working with the students at Ohio State and thinking about, you know, Why am I doing what I'm doing? Who is it for? What's my motivation? And the answer was always the people working for me, to make them better so that our product's better, so that then I can go and say, we have the best in the Big Ten. It's the student athletes who are performing, giving them a good product, their parents at home. So really it always came back to serving. And then it clicked for me. I'm like, I learned that at Wheeling Jesuit. So I think being able to articulate, you know, the way you are as a leader is super important to employers as well, because it's something that people don't typically sit and think about before they go into an interview.
It's so true. And what a great perspective to think that way. I know that when I was first graduating, I didn't think that big. So kudos to you for looking at it, trying to analyze and digest, well, what does leadership mean and how can I exemplify this, and kind of tracking it all back together. That's impressive. Your major, let's get into you a little deeper. Your major was in communications, same as me. And early on in your career, you were in media relations, sports information, before getting into the video production world. When and how did you kind of figure out, okay, this is my lane, this is where I want to push further in my career?
Well, I don't know about you, but I went to college thinking I was going to be on air.
Me too.
And I think a lot
still
of people do
it.
That. They're like, I'm going to be communications, and I'm going to be the next Tim Russert or the next Aaron Andrews, you know, like, yeah, I'm totally. Really horrible on camera.
Me too.
So I learned very fast not to be on camera. That's for sure. But yeah, I really liked, like I said, when I was involved in the athletic department, I really liked the stats and the game notes. So I wanted to kind of dive more into the nerdy side of it after I realized I didn't want to be on camera. And I got an internship with the Wheeling Nailers there in Wheeling and did some work there. And then with the Pirates in their media relations department. So I really loved the work I was doing. And I just kept staying involved in the athletic department. I was streaming basketball, volleyball. What else did we do? Any indoor sport, really, we would stream
right.
for our fans. And my professor, Don Watson, he taught a bunch of classes and volunteered on the weekends to do that streaming. So when I left and took a job at another small school, Brevard College in North Carolina, I kept in touch with him because you don't make a lot of money in sports when you first get out. Sorry to
so true.
Yep. Listeners are
it's just
you
a
know,
fact.
Thinking they're yep. going to. Yeah. So it was a very, very entry-level position. So I knew that I wouldn't be there long. It was just the nature of it. So I told him if anything opened up. And what do you know, he called me and had a job opening back at my alma mater. So I took it because it just seemed like a natural next step and I felt comfortable there already. And I guess during those 3 years, I really realized that my skills were more video than the writing or PR media relations side. So it was a fun journey. I can't take credit for figuring it out myself or give anyone any advice other than just, you know, doing what you're interested in and having a lot of networking contacts that can give you opportunities in a diverse field. So the video thing kind of just happened to me and I fell in love with it.
That's the thing is being, that's the exact power of internships and entry level jobs and staying open-minded to them all and that you're going to get exposed to different things and figure out where you fit.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Okay. So for 6 years, you were the Big Ten Network's production manager based in Ohio State, as we kind of referenced earlier. There are a ton mm-hmm. of events each year. What was the thrust of your role while you were at Big Ten Network?
So yeah, we had a lot of events. I don't even remember the exact numbers, but we had 36 sports that we covered in some way in our department. And I was specifically in charge of the Big Ten Network, BTN Plus streaming. So we had students who ran all of that. So I hired the students and trained them, organized, ran point of contact for every sport we would be streaming. And I really grew in that role in that I became a leader, like we talked about earlier. And it opened my eyes to like a lot of different jobs in sports, just being at Ohio State, how, you know, there's a job for everybody in the athletic department there. There's lawyers, there's athletic trainers. So I had exposure to a lot of different things there. But really I was, managing the TV production side of things for the athletic department.
So you mentioned that you managed a lot of students, and I have to imagine that being a huge challenge because we all know students, no offense to anybody listening, but students aren't always the most responsible. You know, I'm sure there were more than a few occasions where somebody maybe didn't show up or any of those kind of things, when you're depending on them. What was kind of the biggest thing though, that you learned about not only hiring and identifying people who were serious and had attention to detail and all that, but then also managing them through a process as robust is television production. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of intricacies. That's not an easy thing to get people from 0 to 100 ready to produce a broadcast.
Yeah, I definitely learned patience during my time there. And I love every single student that came through during my time there, but they will all admit that they also taught me patience. I really think the biggest thing was like letting them go and trust that your process that you laid in place will survive even if they mess up. Let them make their mistakes, know when to speak up and step in to make sure they don't make a mistake, but let them make that mistake in a good way so that they learn from it. I think in hiring those students, we had a lot of that didn't work out. And that was the one benefit of being able to hire a lot and just see who kind of works out, and who maybe doesn't stay very long. So in looking at those candidates, like I said, the cover letter and showing some personality, and then you would talk to some students that you just knew just got it. They knew what working in sports was about. They weren't showing up just because they were a fan and wanted to go to a football game for free. They understood, you know, what we're trying to do for our fans and for the student athletes. And, you know, the maturity was always something we would look for as well.
Yeah, for sure. That's a hard thing to measure, but you figure out pretty quickly, I'd imagine. Last year, you joined the Philadelphia Eagles as director of production. How would you characterize the differences between working for a pro sports team and a college athletic program? Is there a great difference?
Yeah, there's a lot less events, as I mentioned, right. 36 sports. no, but there's a lot less events, but with the NFL and the tentpole events like the draft and OTAs and training camp, the stakes are higher. So while I might not have 12 events this weekend for softball, baseball, lacrosse during the spring, I may have the draft and the shows we're going to put on, the content we're going to bring, the stakes are a lot higher. Our fans are, you know, a lot more passionate. I shouldn't say that. They're not more passionate than Ohio State fans. They are looking to us for different things. At Ohio State, your number one viewer is always the potential recruit or student athlete. I always had that in the forefront of my mind.
Okay.
And everything we did, because that's really what keeps, that's the lifeline for your program, is getting the best recruits in for all of those 36 sports. So my audience was recruits and then the current student athletes' families, and then it would be our fans. In the pros, your fans are your audience, and that's who you're trying to appeal to. So I think it's really a different, completely different audience. And it's also a different pace, where college is more constant, you know, August through May, and the NFL is very big events that you want to be very diligent and thorough in covering.
How long did it take you? You've been with the Eagles for about a year now. How long did it take you to really understand the fan base and what makes them tick and what's they're most interested in, or really diagnose how best to speak to them?
I turned on, I was still living in Columbus, and I turned on like the TuneIn app or something and listened to some Philly talk radio. So I learned pretty quickly.
Yeah, I bet.
they're very passionate fans, very tough. And you don't fight against that. You kind of just embrace it, and you go with that. A lot of our best numbers for our post-game shows for the Eagles are after a big loss, because people want to come somewhere and sound off and hear what other people are saying about it. But the upside to that is at the end of the season, when our team started doing amazing things, they were, I mean, the most amazing fan base, getting behind the team and being football savvy enough to know everything that was going on. And we just try to feed them the content that they want. They can't get enough. We put out podcasts almost every day a week, and they still want more. So our goal is to just get them as much helmets off content, X's and O's content, anything really that a fan would want. We want to be their one-stop shop for that.
The Eagles obviously have a massive following, Super Bowl champions, and it still pains me to say that because I'm from Boston and that game still kind of echoes in my memory. But what are your goals? How would you identify your goals as you develop the production and entertainment plans for the future? For how does this brand look to you in the future? How do you engage with the fans? How does all this come together for you and your goals for the future?
Yeah, so our senior vice president, Jen Kavanaugh, she's been really big on pushing us to be more progressive in what we do as Eagles Entertainment. And Eric Wong, who's our VP of Content and Production, my boss, he is great with kind of putting a plan together for us and helping us all work together under him. We have, so I'm under Eric, and then we have a director of digital and social who's also under Eric, and a director of digital technology. So all three of us are kind of working together to be on the forefront of the, you know, NFL and what kind of content we're putting out. For my position in particular in the production side of things, we are finding like podcasts to be a really big emphasis because it's, as you know, I'm preaching to the choir.
I know, I love this part. I love this part. Keep going.
Yeah. Just, you know, it's being open-minded to new things and not just sticking with the cookie cutter things we used to do in the past, because things are obviously changing. So while we have our fan base that will always be there for us no matter what, our big goal right now is to tap into Eagles fans everywhere, not just in Philadelphia and not just, you know, our current fan base. But we want to offer up content that brings people in who maybe don't have an allegiance in the NFL or maybe don't like football at all, and they see a helmets off feature on one of our players or alumni, and they become Eagles fans because of something my team puts out.
Okay, so I love that, and I want to ask a follow-up there. Fans are definitely everywhere, which in a way is kind of this double-edged sword. They're everywhere physically, and they're everywhere digitally. No matter where you are in the country, you're going to find an Eagles fan. No matter what platform you're on, you're going to find an Eagles fan. You know, some are on Twitter, others on Instagram, others on YouTube, watching broadcast channels. How do you make sure you're touching all those fans where they are, and you're tailoring the content towards each platform in a way, but you're also exposing the brand to new fans and building more people? I mean, that seems like a pretty daunting challenge. How do you go about that?
Yeah, like I mentioned before, our other directors, they help a lot with that. Sam on our social team, and then Tan May does like our digital technology app website. They all help with like getting our content out there in different ways. So our app is very progressive in how we're offering that up. And I think just being able to work together, the three of us, we put together a really good plan and workflow to get things to the right platform, because I might put together, my team might put together a really, really great video feature that we think is awesome. It's great content. But if we put it on the wrong platform, it might not get too many eyeballs on it. So we really work together in the onset of a project to make sure that we're putting out something that makes sense for every part of that, of our process. So Sam works with us on how long things should be, where they'll get posted, what players we're using for certain things. You know, they're on our social channels all the time, gauging the climate of our fan base and the tone that we should be putting out. So just being able to rely on other people and not thinking I have all the answers, working with others, that has been really important to us getting the right content to the right people at the right time.
I like how you talked about content that was helmets off. You know, like I love that just phraseology to say, like, no, we want to understand the human underneath the helmet, which I love. It's true. Fans are more connected to the athletes than ever before. Like, you can tweet somebody who's a professional athlete and get them to respond, and that's crazy. I mean, we never had that kind of accessibility before. How important is it for you guys as a production team to lean into that part, to lean into the athletes' personalities and humanize them for the crowd and make them into real people rather than just objects? How important is that?
I mean, that's the number one thing we try to do. We try to serve up as much of that content as we can. Fans can't get enough of it. It's, you know, we do podcast interviews. We'll do features that are more in depth. We'll Sam and her team will try to tap into more easy social media ways of tapping into that. These guys are sharing stuff on their own, you know. Carson Wentz shared his baby announcement. That was one of our top posts of the year as we reshared that. Jason Kelce, his wife had a baby and they shared that, and we shared that on our channels as well. And that was one of our top performing posts as well. So it's just, it's amazing that we hadn't had this in the past. You know, growing up, I had some favorite players, and I would love to know the stuff about them that we can offer up to fans now. It's a very, social media is an amazing tool to be able to do that. And we'll offer that stuff up as much as we can. That's our number one goal, is helmets off opportunities.
For sure. You also mentioned in there, which I appreciate, is that, you know, you work with your team and the other people that are in your department, and you're thinking ahead. I think a lot of people think of content and even production as reacting in the moment. And yet it sounds like you guys put a lot of strategy into how long should this be? What platform should we put it on? How do we want to approach this athlete? How much thinking and strategizing do you put into mapping things out for the year versus kind of reacting in the moment as something happens?
We always have a roadmap for everything, and that always changes. But it's important to be ahead of things and have, you know, there are some things that are going to happen that we can't predict. Like, I don't know if you noticed this year, but most of our roster developed some sort of injury or issue throughout the year. So we had practice squad guys playing in the playoffs for us, which was amazing. And we leaned into that a little bit. It definitely changed from the beginning of the year, but having that roadmap already, you know, in mind is essential in developing things on the fly. So, you know, we may be able to predict half of what is going to happen. You know, if like we know the Hall of Fame announcement last week, we knew that was coming. We didn't know if our guy was going to make it, but we know he was on the list, so we're prepared for that. And, you know, we put together pieces that maybe he doesn't make the Hall of Fame. Harold Carmichael went in last week. Maybe he doesn't make it. But then we still have these really cool pieces we could put out at another time. But he did make it, and we had all of this content, you know, ready to go on the shelf. And then during the season, we have interviews we do on a weekly basis with Coach Peterson, who maybe if it's a loss, it's not – you can't use, like, at the same interview you did last week after he won, but we know we're getting him. We know we have to plan it. So thinking ahead as much as possible is always important.
This is so great, and I appreciate you giving us so much time. I want to finish up with this. As you progress in your career, and as you kind of look back on what you've accomplished, what advice would you give to someone who's really thinking about a career in sports production? Are there certain things that you've picked up from mentors along the way, or just things that you've learned that have really set you apart? Are there certain things that come to mind?
Yeah, I think just being open-minded and working really hard is kind of where I see myself, like where I got lucky and where I worked hard are definitely obvious to me. And when I say I got lucky, I was open-minded to different opportunities, like we talked about before, worked really hard so that people at Ohio State or at Wheeling Jesuit saw my work ethic and would recommend me to somebody. And I think just not feeling entitled to anything is really big as well. Because there's a good chance you're going to start out working really hard in the minor leagues or in a small market, not making a lot of money. And you may think your skill set should be used at a bigger and better place, but that doesn't come right away. So I think being willing to do the work and people will start to respect you. Just be ready to work a lot of hours and, you know, giving up some of your holidays and sometimes friends' weddings because sports are 365.
That is for sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Stacy. And I'll even give you a Fly Eagles Fly in there, just even though that pains me a little bit too, because I do live in the Philadelphia area myself. So I have to hear it all the time and my kids are bombarded with it. So I might as well just embrace a little bit of that. But thank you for coming on and talking to us more about your career with the Eagles. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Big thanks to Stacy for coming on the show and putting the spotlight on herself. I know it can be an awkward feeling sometimes when you're the one receiving the questions rather than giving them. So thanks again to Stacy for coming on and sharing her insight. I really love what she had to say about cover letters as a missed opportunity by so many people. And just her journey through sports television production, such an insightful viewpoint that she shared. So thank you all for listening. Thanks for Stacy for being on the show. Please rate and review us wherever you listen, subscribe, share, talk about it, be a part of the show. And we love having you and we love building this community. So thanks again for listening, and everybody get back to work.